WPR is your source for essential news, compelling conversations, and refreshing music and entertainment. Thanks to the support of more than 50,000 members, including a growing number of monthly sustainers, your support makes WPR possible. Thank you.
There are these terms in politics that you hear all the time. Red state, blue state, purple state.
Purple state. It's what happens when you mix the same amount of red and blue. And Wisconsin is just about as purple as they come.
Because elections here, well, the statewide elections, are about as close as they get.
Take the 2020 presidential election. Almost 3.3 million people voted here, a record number. And President Joe Biden won by less than 1%.
Spread the faith. God love you all. May God bless America and may God protect our church. Thank you.
Less than 1%, just 21,000 people. You could fit almost four times that many people in Lambeau Field.
And the 2016 presidential race was just as close, but it went the other way. Former President Donald Trump won Wisconsin that year.
Together, we will make America great again.
His margin was about the same, around 23,000 votes, less than 1%.
In Wisconsin, sometimes Democrats win. Sometimes it's Republicans. The political pendulum swings back and forth.
And it's not just races for president, like in 2018.
In case you may have forgotten, I'm Tony Evers, and I'm incredibly proud to be the 46th governor of the great state of Wisconsin.
Democrat Tony Evers beat former Republican Governor Scott Walker.
But just 4 years before that, it was Walker who came out on top.
Thank you for coming out. God bless you. Thanks for your support. And let's move on to four more great years.
What's another sign you might be a purple state? Your elected officials can sometimes be on extreme ends of the political spectrum.
Look at our U.S. senators. They're kind of a political odd couple. You have Republican Ron Johnson, one of former President Trump's biggest supporters.
And you have Democrat Tammy Baldwin, who tried to impeach Trump twice.
But there's something that doesn't fit here. In this purple state where both parties win and power swings back and forth,
our state legislature, it's red.
It's very red. And it has been for the past decade. The pendulum never swings. But why?
A big reason? Redistricting.
In this podcast, we'll tell you how the political map Republicans drew a decade ago has helped lock in their power.
How the state's district lines were drawn in secret, with even legislators left in the dark.
How the battle over the maps went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
And how redistricting is happening again, right now. From WPR Reports, I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Bridget Bowden. This is Mapped Out. You can't tell the story of political power in Wisconsin without redistricting. The two are inextricably linked.
It's an unseen force, invisible lines on a map that have real, tangible effects on people's lives. It cemented fundamental changes in Wisconsin, the gutting of unions, changes to voting laws, tax cuts for business.
But despite all this, redistricting remains something of a mystery to many people.
So what do you guys know about redistricting?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
I feel stupid saying that, but nothing.
You like in the city of Milwaukee or for the state?
We asked a bunch of people, not legislators or lawyers, just people. What do you know about redistricting? And for some people, it's not a lot.
Absolutely nothing. I really don't know.
I would say I'm probably supposed to be worried about it, but I don't pay attention enough to politics to really know anything about it. So yeah.
I mean, sure, I wish I knew more. I'm not gonna lie, I wish I knew more about politics, period, but I'm also gonna go about my day here happy.
This is really common. People say it's not that they're not interested in redistricting, they just don't know about it. They never learned about it in school.
Do you ever remember learning about redistricting in college, high school, middle school?
I don't. I really don't. Not so much. I feel like I should know that, and that's a miss, and makes me feel uninformed. But I don't, maybe I'm a little. But
we know that this is how a lot of people feel. frankly, neither of us remembered learning about this in school.
But it's worth learning about now, because redistricting is hugely important. You can't talk about political power without talking about redistricting.
Still, it's complicated. There's no doubt about it. So before we get too into the weeds, we have to cover the basics. We need to go back to school, and we're going to need a teacher.
So what got you interested in teaching civics and government in the first place?
Because it's fascinating. I've been a political junkie forever.
That's David Olson. He's a high school government teacher, and he is into this stuff.
David, Mr. Olson, taught social studies at Madison Memorial High School for 10 years. And at least from what we can tell, his classes were fun.
If you were in Mr. Olson's class, you might have worked on a mock political campaign that was a lot like a real campaign. Platforms, media strategy, attack ads, debates. And in deeply democratic Madison, he made a point of bringing in political operatives from both parties to judge his students' campaigns.
They need to know that there are many other political positions out there.
Not every Wisconsin high school student has to learn about redistricting. In fact, some school districts don't require any kind of government class at all. But in Mr. Olson's class, you did.
So students need to learn about redistricting because it has definite consequences for who represents them and what policies we create.
So with Mr. Olson's help, we're going to take you through it.
Ready?
Class is in session.
Everything we are going to talk about in this lesson and this podcast would not be possible without an event that happens once every 10 years.
And man, it is an event. Actually, you should take out your pocket constitutions right now because you all have them because I gave them to you. This is a constitutionally mandated exercise that we must enumerate our citizens. What do we call that term when we count everybody up?
It's called the U.S. Census.
So the census, this process where we count everyone, happens every decade. Why? Because the U.S. Constitution says we have to. And not to get too dramatic here, but the census is as old as American democracy itself.
And it just happened again. The census counted people last year.
So we count people, we find out where they live, and we use that information to draw maps, to do redistricting.
Redistricting. So think of it this way. Wisconsin has 8 U.S. House seats, and each seat, each member of the U.S. House, represents a district.
Those districts are like 8 puzzle pieces that cover the map of Wisconsin. Redistricting decides what those puzzle pieces will look like for the next decade.
And this happens in every single state that has more than one member of the House. It also happens in every single state for the purposes of their state legislature.
Did you catch that? Redistricting not only decides what those 8 congressional puzzle pieces are going to look like, it also slices up Wisconsin into 99 state assembly districts and 33 state senate districts.
Each of those districts, those puzzle pieces, is represented at the state capitol by people, your state representatives and your state senators.
And when we talk about the full puzzle, the way those pieces fit together, we are talking about a map, a political map.
Every 10 years, the Wisconsin Constitution requires that that map be redrawn. The puzzle pieces change because the population changes.
Okay, so think about the community where you live, okay? Have there been people moving out? Have there been new apartment buildings going up, right? Did your city get bigger or smaller in your lifetime, right? Because that's gonna make a difference as to how big your district is.
So when David, Mr. Olson, talks about how big your district is, he's talking about the geographic size of the district on the map, the size of the puzzle piece.
He's not talking about the number of people, because each district has to be roughly equal in population.
This is a fundamental part of redistricting. One person, one vote. We do the census, and then we divide everyone up so that every district has about the same number of people.
Now, any summary of redistricting that you read will tell you that the whole system is also based on these things called traditional redistricting principles. And they are...
compactness.
Contiguity.
Preservation of communities of interest.
And preservation of the unity of political subdivisions.
Catchy, right?
They're kind of like rules, but really more like suggestions, because they're not actually required under the U.S. Constitution. And exactly what they mean is kind of in the eye of the beholder.
Take compactness, for example. Sounds like a good rule, right? You don't want a district to be too spread out. But what is too spread out?
The U.S. Supreme Court uses what they call an eyeball approach. No, seriously. They say you just look at it.
Contiguity is more straightforward. A district needs to be one piece.
You can't take a chunk of Madison and group it with a chunk of Green Bay and then add Superior and call it a district. That's against the rules.
But what about the next traditional redistricting principle? Communities of interest. Good luck defining that one. The idea is that you're supposed to keep people with common interests together.
What kind of interests? Pretty much anything. Maybe it's people who send their kids to a certain school, or everyone north of a certain highway. Let's just say, if this one's on the test, it'll be an essay question.
Now, about that other principle, preservation of the unity of political subdivisions. This one probably sounds the most complicated, but it's actually pretty easy to understand.
Districts are supposed to respect local boundary lines. County lines, cities, villages, that kind of stuff.
The thing is, mapmakers break this rule all the time. Sometimes it's just out of necessity, but sometimes it's a choice.
Mapmakers make a lot of choices. That's their job. But sometimes those choices, the way they divvy up the puzzle pieces, can go a long way to deciding who holds power and who doesn't.
How do they do it? Gerrymandering. More on that after the break.
Sometimes politics can make your head swim. So let the WPR Politics Podcast be your floaty.
We'll haul you out of the deep end with all the latest in Wisconsin state politics so you can decide what's interesting and important.
Subscribe on Apple, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts, and at WPR.org/politicspodcast.
All right, class, all right, take your seats, take your seats. So we've talked about the census, we've talked about redistricting. Now we need to talk about how politicians can use the process to their advantage. We're talking about gerrymandering.
At the beginning of this episode, we said that a lot of people we talked to had never even heard of redistricting.
But gerrymandering? That sounds more familiar.
Does the word gerrymandering bring anything to mind for either of you? Gerrymandering?
I think that's when you kind of stack the deck and you get votes, you get voters, they redistrict and they get the voters in there to change the way the district ends up voting.
I heard that. I should pay more attention to stuff. But I heard the term, but I'm like, oh, they're pissed. Because we watch it on the news, and I'm like, oh, that guy's pissed. You know? Yeah, there's really some strong feelings on both sides, you know?
Is redistricting something that you're familiar with?
No.
Have you heard a term that sometimes gets thrown around is gerrymandering? Is that a term that you're familiar with?
I've seen it on little signs on the side of the road. That's about it.
What do the signs say?
It's like, stop. Gerrymandering, whatever. Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of being sleazy and do things that, you know, just aren't good. I mean, it just to serve their own purpose.
Yeah, when politicians will use redistricting to their advantage.
Gerrymandering is not just another name for redistricting. David Olson, Mr. Olson, says it's a type of redistricting.
Gerrymandering is this process of drawing political lines, of drawing district lines for a political or partisan advantage.
Okay, so this is the part of the lesson where we're obligated to tell you that the term gerrymandering comes from a state senate district drawn like 200 years ago in Massachusetts. A guy named Elbridge Gerry was governor. And yeah, it's Gerry, not Jerry. Go figure.
The district looked kind of funny. A political cartoon said it looked like a salamander.
Which I think, and my students think, looks way more like a dragon than a salamander. I'd have never seen a salamander with wings.
So Elbridge Gerry plus salamander equals gerrymander. Get it? Okay, there is a point to this.
This used to be the only way people thought about gerrymandering. Funny-shaped districts. And that can be a sign of a gerrymander.
But it's not the shape of the district that matters so much as the outcome it creates. Because practically speaking, how a district gets drawn can decide who gets a voice in politics and who doesn't.
And when you draw the maps to silence the voice of one party, that is partisan gerrymandering.
Here's the thing. Partisan gerrymandering is not illegal under federal law. And mapmakers do it all the time.
And when we talk about mapmakers, we're not talking about cartographers exactly. We're talking about the people who are in charge of the process, the people with the power.
And you know what they say about power?
You know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. This is not a Democratic or Republican problem in and of itself. It's a both and, right? This is something where politicians who are empowered often take advantage to cement their own power, right? And ultimately, that undermines the power of individuals to have a say in their government.
Okay, got all that?
Yeah, the census happens and then redistricting, which is drawing a map, which is a puzzle, which can be manipulated, and that's called gerrymandering, right?
Yeah, simple as that.
Cool.
Moving on. So, class. This would be a good time to mention how this works in Wisconsin. Who draws the maps?
In Wisconsin, the state constitution says it's the legislature, and whatever they come up with has to be approved by the governor, just like any other bill.
And they do it after the census. Like we said, this is a redistricting year right now.
So, are they going to be able to do it?
Well, if you know anything about our legislature, which is run by Republicans, and our governor, Tony Evers, who is a Democrat, you know they fight a lot.
And that's putting it lightly. They could, in theory, agree on a redistricting plan, but this is extremely unlikely, which means the next map could be decided in court.
This has basically been the norm in Wisconsin for more than 50 years, because for most of that time, Wisconsin has been under divided government. The state senate, assembly, and governor's office were not controlled by the same party at the same time. This is pretty normal in a purple state.
But the last time Wisconsin's maps were drawn, things were different. It was 2011.
As your governor, I make this pledge. Wisconsin is open for business.
Scott Walker was governor, and the GOP controlled both houses of the legislature. Republicans had just won a massive wave election.
That gave them total control over the redistricting process. They got to draw the map they wanted.
So we know class is almost over, but before you pack up your backpacks, there's one more lesson. Redistricting has consequences, real consequences that affect your life. Mr. Olson says, whether you like it or not, one of those consequences is clear.
The consequence of Republicans doing a really good job of getting elected in 2010 was they made it easier for themselves to get elected in 2012 and 2014 and on and on and on and on and on.
How did this happen? How did one election change Wisconsin for a decade and possibly years to come?
That's next week on Mapped Out.
Mapped Out is reported by Bridget Bowden.
And Sean Johnson. We're produced by Brad Kohlberg. Edited by Noah Ovshinsky. Music by Carl Christensen. Additional support from Adam Friedrich.
Digital editing by John K. Wilson. And digital direction by David Hyland.
Photography by Angela Major. Artwork by John Nichols. Special thanks to Brady Carlson, Jay Carlisle Larson, and Peter Bryant.
You can see more at wpr.org/mappedout.